Good morning. Well, I'll take it that none of you want to talk to me because you're all still muted.
Yeah, now don't take it personal, Tim. So, hey, we're just trying to get by the computers and stuff.
Okay. You know?
Trying to pull up the agenda and and then, to figure out, look at the agenda and then deal with the on screen. We're good.
Okay, good. I see we're still waiting for Beth and Mark, and that's fine. I'm staying pretty busy here, as it turns out.
No, it was, I think all of us, you know, the email thing, we could probably just get rid of that shit. Maybe we, you know, like back in the old days, they came in and met once a month, you know, for 10 minutes and just moved on.
Yeah, I will tell you, I'm pretty anxious to get back to our normal role as county commissioners. You know, this has been real interesting to be as involved as we are, but man, it's hard. It's just hard to keep up with who should be invited to a meeting and who shouldn't, and you know, keeping up with the 24-hour. I got an email from Eric mentioning that he's struggling with keeping up with our agenda setting process.
I saw that too. Yep.
Yeah.
Well, and then you have Fleet Fingers Mountain, you know, so it's like, holy smokes. I can't even think that fast, you know, so it's like, it's way overboard.
Well, you know, for a while I was trying to keep a little spreadsheet of all of the different subjects that we're dealing with. And it was taking me too much time just to list the items, let alone deal with them. So I gave up on that.
Yep.
Good morning, Mark.
Good morning. How's everybody?
We're all staying splendidly isolated.
Good.
I have to admit that I miss the day-to-day contact with folks in the building and some of the, you know, informal conversations we have, and just keeping up with what people are doing and what's happening in their lives. At times, this Zoom stuff works pretty well, taking care of business, it certainly doesn't address the personal day-to-day contact that we have with other things. So
maybe we need a Route County Zoom happy hour. No big news, just catch up. I had a happy hour with my book club last night. It was super fun.
That sounds good. Tim, I'm sure your wife probably say just might like to get us the hell out of the house, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, as it turns out, her business has slowed down a little bit.
Go figure. But real estate is essential, Tim.
But the weather's getting nice. It looks like it's going to be warm this week. So I guess we can go out and play with the horses, do some of that.
Not at the riding arena, though.
Nope, not at the riding arena. I would not do that. By the way, I did ask Donna to float some names of good attorneys that she's worked with in the past on some of these PDR deals. So she said she's got one or two names she's going to get for me. I'll pass those on to Eric. Okay, are we ready to go up next with the meeting?
I am. You're the chair.
Okay, I'm going to call this meeting to order. And the first order of business will be an intergovernmental agreement with Moffat County for the provision of GIS services. Do we have someone from legal to present this to us? I saw Linnea a minute ago.
So hi, Emmy's on the phone too. Yep.
And I see that
great.
Eric is here and ready to talk. Go ahead, Eric.
Well, all I did was the drafting, and I've already received a signed copy from Moffat County. I know very little about the software itself and the dashboard service, but this was direction by the board to allow Emmy to do some work for Moffat County to get this up and running for them. Emmy will do, as I understand it, the initial setup and some ongoing maintenance. And we are also offering the use of our Route County license at no cost to Moffat County. But I think the greater chunk of the work, which is data entry, will be done by the Moffat County Public Health Nurse. Please, Emmy, fill in the holes. Thank you.
So you're correct, Eric. We did all the hard work on the back end, getting it up and running for Route County. So it really was nearly a matter of a copy and paste of the applications for Moffat County. And like you said, their public health nurse will do the data management. I'll be available to help her for minor things, but really they should be off and running with it.
Any other comment, conversation? Good, not all at once.
So, Mr. Chair, so are you ready for a motion? I think I think it's pretty kind of a no-brainer. So, Mr. Chair, I move that we approve and authorize your signature on an intergovernmental agreement with Moffat County for the provision of geographical information system services.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Thank you, Emmy.
Yeah, thank you, Emmy.
You.
I think it's great that we're able to help them out with that and that you turned it around so quickly. So thanks for doing that.
Thank you. I was happy to help them out.
Actually, well, we've got Emmy on the line. Do you have an update for how many responses that we've had in Route County?
You pull it up again. It's somewhere around 1,500 right now.
Wow, that's great.
So Moffat County, did you just do the dashboard or you did the dashboard and the symptom tracker for them?
They're going to do both. They got one dashboard that will show the number of cases with the symptom survey results on it.
Awesome.
Great. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye. Hold it. I think I heard Eric wanted to chime in.
Just because we're all working remotely, I will forward to you, Tim, the signed copy of the IGA from Moffat County, and that way we can have all of the signatures on one document, just as a matter of convenience. And then if you can forward it back to me upon signature, I will take care of distribution.
Great. I will do that ASAP. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Very good. We can move on to the rest of our, we can move on to our COVID-19 work session. I would open it up at this time to anybody that has anything that they'd like to bring to our attention.
I from the department head meeting yesterday, I brought up the idea of departments having internal projects that they might be able to utilize staff for so that everybody has work to do and we're not having many people who are having to use their leave. Obviously, that's always an option if people want to, but that we're finding things for people to do if they would like to be working. and department heads were interested in that idea, but there was a technical question specifically from Kevin, but it applies to the building department, and I think it's just important for us to consider, which is, let's say that our enterprise funds are the best example, but let's say they came up with something. Who would be paying those staff members while they work on that project? And I think it's most relevant to our departments that are not funded from the general fund, but it's probably relevant to all the departments to some degree. So I thought that was an important question. I don't know if you guys want to come up with an answer, if we want to just ask Mark and Dan Sternad to try to figure it out, but what are your thoughts?
The latter. I like the latter, where someone
where we delegate this.
Yeah,
it feels a little in the weeds, but I just wanted you guys to be able to weigh in if you had any thoughts. I guess my thought is we should just have folks continue to get paid by their own department. That seems like the most straightforward way to do it, but maybe I'm not thinking of all possible options.
So this is Doug. I guess, you know, we ought to probably, so my question yesterday was something with the road viewers report. So, you know, that should go probably, you know, whether we keep it in a project or something. My motive is to keep our people working as well. And same, I don't know that, especially if we're talking about regular time, we're not talking about overtime, we're talking about regular time. So I don't know. So I don't really have a opinion on it too bad either way. So I think our objective is to keep our people working as much as we can.
Yeah. So I guess I'd just say maybe, Mark, you understand that objective and just try give us a recommendation on how people should get paid if they're working on a project for another department. And then I know you'll be tasked with gathering what those projects might be and helping to redistribute folks as appropriate.
Yes.
Commissioners, I'm happy to do that. I'll follow up with Dan. And I know it the message is very clear uniformly with all the commissioners, and that is, and I think Doug just expressed that very well, we want to keep our people busy. We've probably got some really good projects out there that it is something that can be accomplished now with the help and assistance of a lot of different staff members. And so we'll follow through with that with all due diligence and come back with a recommendation to the commissioners.
And then Mark, we can probably talk about this offline, but our two departments that have most utilized this emergency on-call status, their department heads are electeds. And so how we communicate with them and navigate that situation, we should probably just think through that, because I think some individual outreach to those two is probably warranted. And I don't know if I should do that or if we want to try to get you engaged or both, but we can, they just flag that. I'm just flagging that for us to have some discussion about.
And I would add to that, there's a couple of things that I've thought of, and I'll pass them along to Mark via email, that kind of like what Doug was talking about with researching road viewer reports. I have a couple of ideas that if we had excess staff, that they could do some research for us to follow up on a couple of things. I won't mention them now. I think it'd be a good idea, anything that any of us think of that would say, hey, how about this? We just forward it to Mark and let him decipher what makes sense and what doesn't.
Yep.
Great. What else do you have, Beth?
I don't even know if you guys need to know this, but I'm just going to say it anyway. We had that question about extending grant deadlines for projects that have to be put on hold, and we wanted to direct that question to DOLA. And so I'm going to go ahead and just email that question probably to Greg and maybe also Rick Garcia. But just so you know, and then Kendra has that on her radar when she's listening in on those local government calls, that if they give an answer, she can convey that to us. And if they don't, then we'll just follow up individually with them and find out the answer to that. And then the final thing is that, just so you know, I did flag for Kendra that we may be having an executive session tomorrow. I don't know, but Eric had mentioned to me that he might be requesting one. And so I asked her to just take care of the technical details of what that would look like, which includes scanning that sheet, Tim, that you usually would use and sending it to you so you have it in front of you, and then figuring out with Zoom what the best way to do that is. And again, if we don't need it tomorrow, that's fine, but we'll know what it is. And then I am prepared to manage the technology side of our meetings over the weekend. So Kendra will just pass that information back to me once she figures that out. That's it for me.
Before Doug gets going, and this is for you, Mark, I have found that my ability to manage the agenda process from a remote location is not going very well. And I would ask that you step in and really take control of the agenda process with Deanna and Kendra. And in particular, for today's session, I guess I thought that we were going to be seeing an update from Dan Sternad on budget concepts moving forward. I see that's not on our agenda, and I see that Dan has not joined us. So I feel like maybe I dropped the ball here somewhere, somehow, somewhat, and without assigning responsibility for it, it's clear that that process needs to improve.
Commissioner, happy to step into that role and make sure that we get things moving forward in the right way without having anything fall through the cracks. I assume then, and maybe this is a question for Eric, we then, without that being listed and being noticed as far as that agenda topic, it's something that we really couldn't discuss this morning.
This is Deanna. Before Eric chimes in, can I just note that on the agenda, we do have it published, and I do have Dan's information. It got published yesterday for that 2021 budget fiscal first aid toolkit item.
Okay.
And I guess we should indicate whether we are going to discuss that, because I'm guessing that the reason we have some department heads here is because they're interested in hearing that discussion. So if we're not going to be discussing it, we could probably let them know that. And if we are, then I'm just assuming that's why they're here. So Tim, you want to?
Okay. Well, Kendra, can you call Dan and see if we can get him on and see if he's prepared to have this discussion? Because there was an email that I sent out yesterday to try to address that confusion. There was some confusion from, I think, Chris Pullman about the already previously scheduled budget process discussion next week. And I communicated with Dan and said, no, wait a minute. I knew we were having that, but I thought on Friday, today, we were going to be having the actual dollars and cents discussion about 2020 budget impacts. And he agreed that that's what we were doing today. So,
should we confirm that Dan's not actually here? There's a few numbers without names.
So Dan is not here, but I do have him on the line. He is prepared to discuss this today. He had a timing of 11:45, so he's just wondering when he should be doing that.
Let's have him come at 11, Tim.
Yeah, I think so. I don't think we need to wait until 11:45. I think we're going to get through our items here in the next 10 minutes that are critical, and the ones that we don't, we'll get to after Dan's presentation. Kendra, did you hear that?
Yep, I just spoke with him. He will be on at 11.
Great, thank you very much. Well, good. I'm glad we got that settled. What else do we have? Doug, do you have anything? I've got just one or two little things. Doug must have muted himself again.
No, yeah, I muted myself, and I can't handle two screens at a time, you know, so I'm trying to figure out, watch the agenda and look at the agenda and the rest. So the letter that was coming out from the Board of Health to the communal living situations, that we approved that yesterday, did we not? I thought, yeah, okay, I see Beth nodding, so yeah. So I'll send an email to Kendra that Dave Hunter at the Ski Corps wanted to have a copy of that so that they could post it on their.
So I, Doug, yeah, the follow-up on that, just so you know, as requested, I followed up with the assessor's office. Gary got us a list within an hour, which thank you to him for that. He also connected with Ulrich, Board of Realtors, about contacting HOAs, and they were going to. And then we assigned it through the EOC. The issue that we needed to follow up on is that the assessor's office mostly just has phone numbers and mailing addresses. And so someone was assigned, which actually ended up being someone from the assessor's office, but through the EOC, someone was assigned, and they, which is Robin David, and she is going to be calling each of those folks to get an email address so that we can email them the notice. And she was working through that, and they'll let us know when that's done. Doug, you may want to check in with Eric or with Carrie, because I think we had discussed the possibility of some places receiving an individual letter, and I don't know if Ski Corps is on that list or not, so you may want to just offline check in about that before sending that to Dave. And then the only other thing on, nope, that was all. That's all on that.
So we post, I mean, the letter was in our agenda packet. The generic letter was in our agenda packet for yesterday, was it not?
Correct, and you could refer him to that, but I just ask you to maybe check in with Eric and Carrie.
Okay, because yeah, I would just copy that thing and send it to him, and he wanted to go through the process of putting it on all the, make a copy of it, putting it on all the doors, which we had kind of talked about as well. So I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
I'll chime in. Sorry. Doug, that's fine. I think it's perfectly fine. If he receives the letter, the board also authorized the public health director to sign similar letters for specific residential facilities, and that has not been completed yet. I'll follow up with our public health director to see if she thinks that's still necessary at this point to send those specific types of letters. And if so, Ski Corps may or may not get an additional letter. I see no harm in that. Thank you.
Great, thank you.
Well, we've got a couple of minutes and we're waiting for Dan. As far as the joint meeting with Moffitt County, I've followed the emails and with Carrie. And fairly expressing a little bit of frustration about what meetings she's supposed to attend and when and how quickly we are making decisions about having meetings that might potentially involve them. And I agree with Beth's recommendation that we have a standing Wednesday 12 p.m. meeting for the Board of Health. Do we want any conversation on that before I ask some more questions about the joint meeting with Moffitt County?
I can just also add, you know, Carrie had just expressed concern about tomorrow's meeting and she heard Robin say this morning that we were having a Board of Health meeting today and that she hadn't been told, and she had just, it, you know, she's trying to, she and Brian are both trying to juggle a pretty complicated schedule. And so my suggestion was, would it help you if we just set a time weekly and knowing that we may have things that need to be addressed more quickly, but that anything that can wait, we'll save for that meeting. And she said that would be helpful to her and suggested that Wednesday at noon time.
So my follow-up question to that is, I've heard back from the Moffat County Commissioners that they are available on either April 7th or April 10th in the afternoon. But then I also heard from Carrie on that same email string that she was available at 9:30 a.m. on Tuesday and Thursday. And so my suggestion was going to be that I just get back with all of them and ask them if 11 o'clock on Wednesday, if they couldn't make that meeting and condense it all into that one meeting.
I'm fine with whatever, but I do, I think, you know, honoring Carrie's request around that would be good. I think we have a little more flexibility than she does. And then, you know, I imagine the Moffat County Board probably is in the same boat as us. So I think if whatever works for her is probably going to be our best bet, but I'm fine with her.
So that's going to be, that's how I'll proceed. I'll see if we can't set it up for Wednesday at 12 noon for everybody. If for some reason that doesn't work, then I'm going to ask the Moffat County Commissioners if they would be available at 9:30 a.m. on the 7th or the 10th. And after I get that ironed out, I'll get back to you guys.
Can I throw in another thing? Sorry.
Please.
You know, what Robin mentioned on the EOC meeting this morning was that letter from the commissioners regarding use of face masks. I wasn't thinking we needed official Board of Health action if we've all reviewed that. We got input from Dr. Harrington yesterday. So I don't know if you guys have any thoughts, or Robin, if you had a specific thought about that. I was surprised to hear you say that the Board of Health would be meeting today to review that. So I want to make sure we're doing what's needed on that front.
This is Robin. I wasn't sure from the meeting yesterday if you were taking, I mean, I drafted something and got some edits back from people, whether you needed to take a vote on that. I'm learning the process. So,
who are we, Robin?
Since the CDC has not come out on that recommendation yet, neither has the White House. There's been rumblings about it, but so if we did it, we would be pre-federal guidelines. So I don't know if you want to wait for the federal or if you just want to go forward. So that was I didn't feel like we had made the decision to go ahead and put that out to the community. So I just wanted to make sure before we did anything.
I can weigh in. I mean, I felt like Dr. Harrington was pretty clear that he believes the evidence is good, that there is some benefit to people wearing masks when they're in public. And that's what our press release reflects. I understand that the federal guidance, who knows where it'll go, quite frankly. And I believe that we put that out under the advice of our medical officer. So I'd be in support of putting it out as we've written it.
So I would too. This is Doug. Yeah, I've been, again, especially the championing of a personal preference and the choice and that individual choice of doing that, and not necessarily government regulations that you have to do whatever. But so, you know, I think I was advocating for that about 4 or 5 days ago, that the fact that, you know, it potentially it could be something that could help us, and we're actually being proactive and doing things, and it was a personal choice. And but then also not chastising somebody in public because they had a mask on. So that was what I was trying to get out.
Got it. So I will have a new draft soon. I'll just be typing while you guys are talking and just have it for your final review before we send it out.
And I guess I would just say that my opinion about a vote versus not, I don't, because it's not an order or a directive, and it really is a in the category of a press release, I think that just direction to Robin is sufficient and a vote is not needed, in my opinion.
I agree.
Okay, I'm on it.
All right.
You'll get it. You'll get it momentarily as I just make some more edits on it.
Can't wait. I see that Dan has joined us, so I would suggest that we move forward with Dan's presentation on budget concepts for 2020 and beyond. Dan?
Can I make just a general comment about this before we dive in? I think that sometimes we all are very inclined to just move very quickly toward action. And I think that's commendable in some ways, but I guess I would just encourage us to make sure we start with talking about what our goals are here. And I don't mean to stop Dan. I think talking with Dan, it will be great, but I guess I'd like to just encourage us to start this conversation with what we're trying to accomplish. Obviously, we're trying to fill the budget shortfall, but we also, I think, should talk about, you know, are we trying to reduce the number of layoffs? Are we trying to, you know, I don't know, but I don't think we have to answer that question first, but I just encourage us to keep that mindset. We've talked about with Robin and, you know, with the three of us, how important that is to start with the goal and the objective. And so I think I'd like to advocate for us leaving today, identifying what those objectives are so that we can let our staff work on, in conjunction with department heads, on identifying how we might achieve those objectives, if that's all right with you guys.
Yeah, I mean, actually, I'm not sure that I even felt we needed to get that far, although I'm not opposed to that. I was treating Dan's presentation to us today as purely informational. And I'd kind of like, I mean, personally, I'd like to just have a day or two to absorb this and then have more robust conversations next week. I mean, I understand the need to move quickly when we need to, but I don't think that our budget is such a crisis that we need to be making any significant decisions before next week.
And I'm fine with that too. I guess what I want to discourage is, you know, we know that it's going to cause a significant amount of anxiety among our staff members once we start just throwing around ideas. And I think it would be best if we kind of avoid that type of spitballing and work strategically instead. So I would just advocate for us approaching this in that way.
I'm good with that, Doug.
Sounds good. I'm good.
All right. Dan, we're anxiously awaiting your presentation, and I see that you have successfully, once again, shared your screen with us.
Okay. All right. So what I've done here is basically we've used I sent out yesterday a document to the department heads. It was called Cash is King, Short-Term Strategies to Slow the Flow of Money Out the Door and Keep the Budget Balanced. So I'm kind of going through that outline there. It's definitely not a all-inclusive outline of everything that the county could possibly do, but it does get ourselves thinking and the department managers thinking about how we're going to address the what we talked about the other day as far as our governmental activities revenue decreasing 11% or the $3.8 million. And these are just tools. They're not, you know, which ones we use is you know, up to basically you guys, how we're going to, how to use it and what strategies we're going to use. And it's like, it's not also, you know, this is short term, but then also we need to look at ourselves going out into the future to make sure that we're financially stable. Because when I look back at the several of the revenues, especially like sales tax and auto use tax, motor vehicle fees, SO tax, those kind of things. It took almost 8 years before we, 7 to 8 years before we actually were able to recoup those revenues as they were before the 2008 or the Great Recession. So it's going to, you know, that's where I'm talking about the sustained part of this idea too. And that's going to be, you know, that's going to probably come along with our, we need to do something shortly and then we need to do something in the long term out there. But in any event, this is kind of a list of those items that came out of the Cash is King document, and it should start some ideas going out here. So we've got the first item here is reduce capital spending. We can reduce the scope of capital investments, purchase what is really needed. And then what they were saying out there is what bells and whistles can be removed from the purchase. Okay. And that's, you know, as we go through the purchasing process and what have you out there, we can hopefully look at that and we can make sure that we have what we need as opposed to what we think we need. And then defer certain capital asset purchases, review capital asset replacements and additions and determine which items can be deferred. This has short-term positive ideas because it generates cash flow, but then it, say for the instance, an overlay of a road or a piece of equipment, those items are still going to be sitting out there in the future. And depending on what, you know, like what the item is, because like right now, price of oil is still just barely above $30 a barrel. It might be interesting to see to still put out a, you know, even if we do look at infrastructure for overlay, it still might be interesting to still put the bid out and see what the price is for that overlay, because at $30 a barrel, it might be substantially cheaper than what we've ever been able to purchase for quite some time. And we just need to evaluate that kind of thing. Improve capital project management. Yeah, it's not uncommon for the county to start a project with approved budget, but to be delayed. And then we just need to monitor these situations and potentially if it makes sense to cancel those projects that aren't moving forward and can free up the funds and maybe do those at a later time or something like that. Questions on that area?
So I just have a comment here. And again, we don't know what the future's going to be out here, but I don't know. My concern about the recovery, I actually think there's, and I haven't seen it yet, but I think there's going to be some deals out there. And I mean, people are going to be wanting to go to work. I mean, and they're going to be wanting to have some people out there working. And so by having cash and having money budgeted, you know, I think we ought to hold out for the best deals too. And really, you know, we've been in providers market for quite a while, and so I think right now it might be changed a little bit and that us the buyers could be in a better place and be demanding better prices.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, like with the price of oil, I mean, who knows what that's going to do for us, and or any of them, steel, what have you. Yeah,
Dan, can you it's all right if you're getting to this later. Can you just let me know, are you going to give us a review of what strategies were used in 2008 and 2009, either now or later, just so I know when.
Yeah, you know, it's pretty much like this, like what we're going through right now. And then there's a few more in this document here than that was actually in the Cash is King idea too. And but they, you know, we definitely did the same thing here where we looked at deferring capital purchases and that kind of thing. And then also we looked at you know, the internal service funds or the pools and determined whether or not, you know, what we were looking at as far as the internal service fees and that kind of thing. And we looked at personnel, we looked at operations, and then it's a matter of like, how do we want to just put this out to the department managers and say, okay, here's your, you know, maybe we want to just start out with the 2020 budget and go, okay, this is to get ourselves into a ballpark, if you will, with, you know, what we're seeing right now. And as the economic information comes in, we're going to look at that and see what we have to do accordingly.
So just to make sure I understand, so this list of recommendations pretty closely matches what you did in 2008 and 2009.
Yeah.
So you're not going to talk about that separately.
Yeah. It's pretty inclusive. I mean, it's not, you know, everything, but you know, it's, we're getting down to what we need to get down to. So
that sounds great. Thanks, Dan.
Okay.
So Dan, I actually, to follow up on Beth's comment, you know, we did have some specific things that we did. It might be worthy to you to write up a specific memo, because we did have some pay cuts, we had some layoffs, and yep. It might be worth you coming up to write up a memo to, just these are the things that we did.
Yeah, I got some of that in further down in this document, actually. So, and I guess
I'd just flag that a lot of our department heads weren't here then. We've had a lot of turnover since then, so that information will be helpful to them too,
probably. Oh, yeah. That's very true. We probably got, I don't know. Seems like me might have been here, huh?
You and Doug.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just thinking about that. Yeah, I don't know if we got anybody here. That. Yeah. So, okay. So we got reduced material and contractor costs. What we're looking at here is re-examine maintenance and replacement standards. For example, extend service frequencies on vehicles from 5,000 to 7,500 miles. Vehicles today appear to be built better than in the past. Examine useful lives of vehicles, equipment, and infrastructure. Some examples of that, what we did is, like, when we looked at, bridges, we went from 50 years to 65 years on our bridges, and that still stands true out there as far as useful life. Equipment, we looked at quite a few different pieces of equipment as far as extending our useful lives on those. And then also we looked at asphalt. We went from anywhere from 5 to 20 year or 5 year on our chip and seals to 20 year asphalt life. And then we went to 7 years for chip and seals and 21 years as far as asphalt life. We may look at that again, or at least come up with a number that we would know what that means if we were to go to 8 year chip and seal lives and 24 year pavement lives and that kind of thing. So that's definitely in the works. And the same thing with vehicles, you know, we can look at how many miles we're actually driving those vehicles and that kind of thing. All that'll come into play. Then this was just an article that, or in part of the article, has a reduced use of paper. This could help the county adapt better to the current conditions where personal contact is limited and remote work is prevalent, in addition to cost of paper the less. That was just something that we want to make sure we get out there, and so that, you know, that we don't spread the COVID idea and that kind of thing out there. So whatever we can do to help that. Then save energy. Facilities may be underutilized because of alternative work sites. For example, start and end times of buildings and heating and cooling systems and adjusting the temperature. Keep vehicles tires inflated properly. These are just, things that people start thinking about. Eliminate low and no value tasks. Is there value added to the process? If there isn't, then we need to, you know, remove those. Allow managers the permission to identify and eliminate this kind of work. Review software maintenance contracts, evaluate maintenance contracts to determine if we can stop paying or if we can hire a third party to provide support at a lower price and continue the use of software. Rethink subsidies in internal programs and outside agencies. That's where we look at the community services budget and discretionary funds. Again, I think, you know, what we're going to, you know, hopefully I think what we're going to do is, and this is not set, is that, you know, we basically give the department managers a budget, and then they go back and look at each, you know, the revenues and operations, personnel and capital, and then they can come up with ideas where they can help us get back to the, you know, get back to a balanced budget and that kind of thing. So here we got any questions in that area? Mm-mm. Okay, create more advantageous inflows and outflows of funds. This is just something that we should try to do more of, is delay the payment to vendors to maximize the amount of time for a payment. Won't reduce the cost, but will provide better cash flow. Look for areas of consistent surplus in prior budgets. Analyze the four-year budget to actual revenue and expense reports and eliminate surpluses to the 2% goal. That was part of the budget package that we talked about a few weeks ago, is to look at that on an individual basis. And however we can get back down to that 2% idea, that's, you know, that's money that's sitting out there, and we can, you know, use that in the to balance the budget again. Get new resources, review equipment and health insurance approvals, internal service fees and cost allocation formulas. review the fees and determine if the reserves and the pools are adequate. Again, those, you know, like we can definitely look at, I'm going to kind of go into the next statement here, but we definitely look at the opportunity to use some of those reserves also, if need be. And also, in addition, we can look at the cost allocations to the business activities funds. That would probably be YVRA and building department. Then we have evaluate reserves. We did discuss governmental activity reserves from closing the books, 2020 books, general fund 10% committed reserve, Tabor reserve, and general fund capital reserve. And then we should still look at, you know, like once we get some of these ideas put back, we need to put it back into one of these ideas to balance the budget. We need to put them back into the budget and then see how it looks as far as the current year and then also sustainability going out into the future years. So that we'd be looking at what happens with E911 Communication Department of Human Services and the equipment pools. Consider monetizing assets. Now this is quite harsh. I mean, that would be like we wanted to sell some buildings or something like that to free up some cash. You know, it's not the most advantageous time to do that kind of thing, but definitely can look at that thing. In addition, we can look at newer revised fees where appropriate. We need to review fees in order to, where can we review the fees in order to cover the cost of the services that we would provide. A lot of our fees are established by statute in certain cases like the clerk's office or something like that, or the treasurer's office, but that doesn't mean that we couldn't ask, you know, at a legislative point or something like that to look at those fees, or, you know, what are those fees that we actually have control over. We can also look at those to see if we can't cover some of our costs. Maybe not be the greatest idea during this time, but it is an idea. We got reduced personnel costs. We're looking at, you know, we did a short-term hiring freeze, did that for quite some time. I don't exactly remember how that was, but it was quite a few months, and or extend the time the position is vacant that's out there. Now, at some point, you know, you need to look at each one of the positions. There's always pitfalls in any one of these tools that we're using out here. And we want to make sure that, you know, like if there's a position that, you know, that is essential that we need to fill that position, it needs to happen. So eliminate vacant positions in the budget, eliminate non-essential positions or positions that are hard to fill. I don't know if there's a whole lot of that in our budget, but considering that when we look at this year, we had a 2% budget variance with our actual expenditures. So we can look at that, but it definitely is an idea. And then we have attrition. We need to examine those, like if a person leaves or something leaves, we need to look at the position and see whether or not we can leave that position vacant or does it make sense to fill that position. Stretch professional development funds, and what I'm looking at there, this is limit or eliminate travel to conferences and promote internet training during COVID. So again, that should save some costs in general out there. Shared personnel, this has already been discussed, definitely at the department manager meetings, and there'll be increased demand for services in some areas and decreases in others. There could be employee illnesses where we could cover some of that work. And then where there's outsourced work could be completed with in-house staff, potentially avoiding layoffs. Reassess personal equipment needs, purchase laptops instead of desktops going forward in order to facilitate alternate work site locations. And that's just wherever we can look at that throughout the county. That's just an example. We could allow voluntary part-time status if it makes sense. You know, again, you need to look at whether or not the position is necessary or essential, that kind of thing. But we could allow some part-time, you know, people to move down to a part-time status. They need to look at their benefits, you know, especially health insurance if they're already receiving that, but it is an option. Voluntary time off for employees. Again, need to evaluate essential versus non-essential staff, but it is an option where we could save some money. Look for opportunities to reduce employee benefits. And the idea that I was looking at there is decrease in health insurance premium is dependent upon claims. I know we've been using the 9%. We don't know how COVID's going to impact us exactly or what our claims are going to be in the future. I know we had a great year last year. Where I'm at right now is that December was a high month, so was January. But we'll see what happens with February. I've not seen that yet. So that's something we definitely need to evaluate there. And then we had mandatory time off for employees. During the Great Recession, the work week for non-exempt staff was reduced from 40 hours to 36 hours. Some positions were allowed to work more than 36 hours. The 4 hours more than the 36 to 40 hours were booked as a straight comp time, and after 40 at time and a half comp time. And then when funds were available, the comp time was paid out. Then we made some acceptable reductions in service levels, reducing hours open to the public and eliminating services that are nice to have but not essential. And we had a compensation reduction during the Great Recession. It was a 10% decrease in compensation was approved for exempt and non-exempt staff. And so for the non-exempt staff, that was, there's still, the idea there is they still need to do whatever it takes to get the job done. So, and then last but not least, we looked at layoffs during the Great Recession, and those were approved. So
I have a question about compensation that's a little bit in the weeds and kind of a one-off, but I just was curious, what is our authority to reduce the salary of elected officials, including ourselves?
That was interesting during the Great Recession. We had and Doug, you can maybe remember this a little bit, but we had a variety of events that took place. Some elected officials honored the 10% reduction, and basically that went back to the county. Some had, put some strings on it. They wanted it to go to community services budget for a particular nonprofit and that kind of thing. But there's kind of the flavor that took place during that time. So it's more, I know we definitely had it. I'm trying to remember whether or not, I don't think we can mandate it, but it was a voluntary thing.
So it's maybe more like donating a portion of your salary back to the county in a technical sense.
Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I have a question. When you talk about the 10% compensation reduction, was that a reduction in addition to the reduction of hours? In other words, employees were reduced to 36 hours, and then on top of that, they took a 10% pay cut?
Yes.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And I've got some, I've worked up some numbers. I just want to review those a little bit more, but I do have some numbers on what each one of those can potentially generate for us. So I have those available also.
So yeah, I'd comment, Beth, on the discussion about the elected officials. You know, it was, a pressure game, but everybody did it. The problem with the taxes at that point in time, we still got compensated for it. And especially now when they changed the itemized deductions and the rest. So you get taxed for it and you donate it back to the county and you don't get the deduction. So that was part of the bill that was going to be coming this year out of the state legislature, was to allow for a reduced compensation up front to the elected officials, a voluntary up front.
And they didn't squeak that one through, did they? I don't remember. I know it was pretty close.
So I think it's still on the books, and so it hasn't gone anywhere. So it was still in calendar.
Okay. We don't have to get into the weeds on that. It's just something I was curious about. Thank you.
So to say the least, it just like Dan said in response to Tim's question, it wasn't very popular when we took a 10% across the board pay cut already and then shortened the hours as well. So, it wasn't really popular at that point in time.
And the
get a lot of thank you notes?
When I say mandatory time off for employees, actually we called that the furlough. That was called a furlough for Brown County. So the thing that's different here, I think, though, is that the federal legislation to help out is the unemployment. You can file for unemployment for that reduction in hours, which was not I don't remember that it was allowed during the Great Recession. So
I appreciate all of this. I guess I'm curious where we're headed next here. Maybe you or Mark or both of you could let us know. I assume you mentioned there'd already been some communication to department heads, and I don't see Mark anymore, so I don't know. Oh no, now I see him. People just disappear off of this thing. It's so funny. So could you just let us know kind of where you're thinking we head next with what the communication to department heads and how that information and decision-making comes back to us?
Yeah, or Mark, whoever wants to start. Are you there, Mark? Mark doesn't sound
like this. He's
talking in his office. Did you unmute yourself, Mark? There he is.
Yeah. Okay.
I'll chime in. So again, one of the things that that we've undertaken even this week is to begin the conversation with the department heads about what they can identify that are deferrals, reductions, things we can put on hold, capital projects that we can either, again, delay or maybe not enter into contracts right now, contract for services. So I've asked all of them to go across the board within their budgets and begin to identify some of those elements that we think can contribute to a lot of the things that have been talked about on Dan's list. I can tell you, and I'm cautiously optimistic that even within your public works department, that when we talk about a potential delay in something like a chip seal, some of the asphalt programs, bigger equipment purchases, those kinds of elements that we look at in a little bit more detail, we can find some significant savings there. Now, again, it's you know, no gain without pain. It's a question and probably a policy question for the commissioners. Are you comfortable in deferring something like chip seal for a year or the asphalt program? I know that was done during the past recession, but like everything else, it's pay me now, pay me later. We're going to have some cascading effects for that in from a maintenance standpoint later on. But again, I would reemphasize within a budget reduction exercise, some of the things that you absolutely look at first is within that framework of your big ticket items, your capital projects. And in looking at those right now, there are significant savings that would really, quite frankly, be upwards of the $3 million mark. I know Dan has identified $3.8 million as somewhat of a very, very, very early target. But even within your public works department, again, talking about those larger ticket items, you're going to be in the neighborhood of anywhere from $3.5 to $4 million in potential budget savings.
So Beth, this is Doug as well. I think you started off this whole session in the right mode. I think the commissioners need to keep our objectives, and we just talked about that. So I totally support that whole concept too. We need to keep our objectives and then our ways to get there, you know, and keep that in mind.
Yeah, so maybe we could try to define some objectives that we could give to Mark and to Dan as they start working with department heads on identifying possible budget savings. And then we could find out from Mark and Dan what timeline makes sense for them to bring us back some, you know, beginnings of a proposal.
So I would chime in on that. I guess I would throw this out as an objective of mine, which would be we achieve the budget reductions that we need to without dipping into reserves. And the reason that I say that is I think we're going to need those reserves next year.
Commissioner, thank you for that feedback. I'm going to harken back to something that Doug said earlier, and I think that it's an extremely important point. I think we're going to hear a little bit more conversation and rhetoric about the fact that when we begin to see some light at the end of the tunnel,
Did we lose him?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I'll shout out the door to him.
High tech, all right.
So there's light at the end of the tunnel, but there's no voice at the end of my earplug.
His computer died. He's plugging in and then he'll be back with us.
Oh, shucks. Huh.
I guess I would, I understand what you're saying, Tim, and as I admitted my ignorance yesterday in fully understanding reserves, and that's why we have financial experts to advise us. So I guess I would be curious for kind of a little more description of what that would mean or if that's a good idea. And I understand what you're saying, Tim. We don't know how long this is going to last, and we may very well need those reserves later. And so for 2020, we should not dip into them. Is that what you're really saying?
And honestly, I'm throwing that out as a point of conversation. That's not a fully formed thought, other than instinctively protecting reserves feels like a good idea to the extent we can.
Dan, do you want, it sounded like you took a breath.
Well, I did. you know, what I will say is, you know, it's very, you know, especially with our capital, I mean, it takes a long time to build up those reserves. And once you use them, so like if, you know, like once you use them, it, you know, like it takes a while to get them back and that kind of thing, so that we don't have, because I was just thinking about like asphalt. If we don't take care of our asphalt roads, then what we've seen is out there, you know, the price to repair one of those roads becomes like 4 to 5 times more than what is we were able to do it in a timely manner. And, but, you know, it's this balance idea of like, you know, we can use some reserves to get us, you know, cash flow, you know, like to shore up this $3 million that we're looking at up there. But in the long haul, like I'm saying, there's a lot of these revenues that are, basically took us 7 to 8 years before we saw that, you know, that's just with the 2008 recession. We don't know what's going to happen out here, but it 7 or 8 years before we were back to those same numbers again. And then property tax, you know, like we're looking at probably, you know, again with that, even though it's going to be quite stable for at least 3 years into the future. And then it'll be interesting to see what, you know, how much of a credit we still have at that point in time, because I'm feeling like, to a certain extent, you know, when we do the reassessment, we're only going to have probably 2.5 months, 3 months of sales that have been, that will go against that 2-year reassessment year. So the credit could go up even higher at that point, you know, just because of how the system works and that kind of thing. But we'll have to see what, you know, what after that period of time. I mean, you know, I don't know how far this is going to go out, that, you know, that's 3 years. And then after that, we may see, like we saw in those projections on Wednesday, you know, where the property tax gets quite tight out there, where we may not see the increase, or it may be, you know, may see a decrease because we may not have as large a credit. So there's a balance, you know, how we come off with this, and then how we look at personnel costs and balance the equipment and the equipment that we need and the infrastructure that we need out here to serve our public.
So I guess I would tend to agree with Tim. I mean, and I think putting that as an objective, but recognizing that if staff has a different recommendation based on their analysis, that we would want to hear that too. And it sounds like really it would be about a strategic use of reserves. Like if there's a project, for example, that we would expect it's just going to be more expensive to us later, that would be an example where it might be strategic. It might be a strategic choice to use some reserves. But I'm okay with identifying the objective of not dipping into our reserves in order to balance the 2020 budget, knowing that we don't know how long this is going to last and we want those funds available to us in future years. So I'm okay with that.
Great. Do we want to identify another objective in addition to that?
So this is Doug. I guess we want to make sure we, you know, our government responsibility is health, safety, and welfare. So, you know, we need to keep that in mind. That doesn't mean the Cadillac model or the Lexus model, but, you know, somewhere out there. So we need to keep in mind health, safety, and welfare. And the other thing, one of my objectives will continue to be, you know, that we're sharing the pain, as what we talked about a little bit earlier, with all the employees, and that, you know, I'm really hoping that, you know, and again, we did that through the 2007, we tried to maintain our staff and not have a bunch of layoffs. And so I would hope that we would try to head that direction. I realize our conversation we had a little bit yesterday, if you're not doing anything, but I think those are temporary times. I think we weren't overzealous in our staff, and I don't think that we had that much more staff than what we really needed to function. We were still running pretty lean in my mind, and so I'm hoping that for the long term, at least for a year or something, that we past a year, that we, I think our staffing levels is going to be pretty good. So I think we're going to have to figure out how we share the pain and how we can keep our staffing levels to the way we at, to providing that same level of health, safety, and welfare. So
I think, Doug, that the health, safety, and welfare, would you also articulate that as just we have kind of some minimal and core government functions that need to be maintained, and that those things should be prioritized in this, I assume is what you mean.
Yeah, that's good. But yeah, that's kind of fluffy too. I mean, we found it's all a little fluffy. Yeah, it is fluffy. So when, you know, even the mandated services, it's still discretionary about how good you do that, and
right,
how much services you provide in that matter. So, yeah, I think the core services are good, but I think there's a lot of other things that aren't probably core things that we really still, that we can afford to provide. So,
yeah, there's kind of a minimum service level concept that we probably want to analyze, right?
So would that become identifying those services that we don't believe are essential and could be delayed?
If we think they're out there, I think definitely that makes sense.
So that would be an effort by staff to identify non-essential services and then leave it up to the commissioners to decide whether or not we're going to continue those non-essential services and or at what level.
That makes sense to me. And then I would agree with Doug that minimizing layoffs should be an objective as well.
I agree, because I think what we're going to find out as staff tries to identify those services that may not be essential, they're going to struggle to come up much that we're currently providing.
Yep. I have a question about, just philosophically, we have people who are directly involved in supporting the emergency response in various ways. Do we want to consider the people who are doing that work in a different way from everyone else, or are we looking at kind of a county-wide strategy that includes everyone, regardless of whether they're working on these emergency functions? For the short term, obviously, when we're talking about more recovery, once all this is over, it'll be a different conversation.
Yeah, I don't have an answer for you on that, Beth.
I know.
Kind of caught me. I don't know. So yeah. So do we? I still think, you know, it's worked out pretty damn opportune that we have some people that are able to do the jobs that they're doing in the EOC and the rest, and that, you know, maybe there's that it was lessened in their departments that they were able to do that, from my thinking. But I still think we need to keep our eye on the year goal, a goal from a year from now, and then work toward that. And EOC is just part of the situation to get to there. So I don't know. I'm thinking outside, thinking and talking.
Yeah, it's a hard question. I guess where I can, you know, if I could just make it a little more concrete, you know, for example, if we did look at an across the board pay reduction, would we want that same thing to apply to the people who are involved directly responding to this emergency? That, and again, in the short term, in the longer term, I think we'll have to be looking at everyone. And I don't know the right answer there, but I think we need to determine what we think about that. It's a little hard to think about cutting someone's pay when they're working 14 hours a day responding to this emergency. So I don't know.
I mean, Beth, I don't have an answer for you either. I do believe that you've raised a pertinent issue. I'm certain that the sheriff would have an opinion on how we might treat public safety employees differently than the rest of our employees.
Well, and I would mention did make that decision. They had a list of folks that they did not apply their pay cut to, and it was specifically those people whose work is critical to this emergency. And I don't know, I struggle with it both ways. You know, I struggle with the idea that these people, we have people who are doing a significant amount of work to respond to this emergency, and I would really hesitate to cut pay for those folks if we don't have to, if we can avoid it. And then on the other hand, you know, it feels not terribly equitable to favor some folks over others. So I don't know, I guess, I don't know which way I would go on that. And maybe that's enough discussion of it for today, and we can revisit it, just that's been flagged as part of this conversation for consideration about how we would want to think about that.
I agree with that. And we also don't know what we don't know right at the moment until staff comes back with a menu of options to address the budget shortfall, to what extent we really need to look at personnel.
Right.
So back to the comment here that, you know, the emergency people and responders and the rest, you know, I'm good with that. But when 2007, when we did this, those numbers became the new base. And so we need to keep in mind that new base changed. So it went down 10% for all those people. And then then we worked back up out of there after that with our salary surveys to come back up. Because the salary surveys, the base on the salary surveys did go down during the 2007 recession as well. So our reduction in 10,000 or 10% was also reflected in the base, and then we recovered some of that, or the employees were quote unquote kept whole during that period by us coming back with salary surveys. I will guarantee you right now that the salary survey now today, or in 3 months or 5 months, will be a hell of a lot different than what we were looking at in December of 2019, as we were potentially looking at a salary survey. When your discussion, Beth, when we talk about that, so somehow, if the emergency goes away, how do we get those people that were on propped up emergency pay, that they get down into what the real world would be? And, you know, we've always struggled doing the salary surveys, especially when you have a reduction in your pay. So, oh, no, if we're going to have a higher, we're going to give you the higher amount. But if your salary survey comes back at a lower number, we're going to keep you whole and we're going to keep you at the same salary. So those are some things that we need to keep in mind as well.
I appreciate all that, Doug. And I think those are things that definitely should be considered. And when we get to the kind of tactics level conversation about this. So that's important. Just one other thought I might throw into the mix, which really is just brainstorming on the tactics side. If we wanted to differentiate between folks who are directly responding to this emergency and people who are not, maybe there's some kind of a concept of like hazard pay. Hazard pay is not quite the right term. That could be, you know, their base pay gets this. If we go in the direction of making a cut, which we haven't decided on, but maybe that would be another possible way to address it, is to have the cut apply, but then there's some kind of
stipend
or hazard pay kind of idea for the people who are responsible for emergency response functions. And then once the emergency is deemed to be over, that would go away as we get into the long-term recovery. So I guess just another idea to throw on the table for consideration. We don't have to, obviously we're not deciding today, but that's the other thing that comes to mind for me.
Just a historical piece of information. I know when we did the 10% across the board, that also applied to like the airport and the building department.
Thanks, Dan. Yeah, I think it's just a different situation because we have this emergency response, you know, that that is directly related to why these pay cuts might be needed or the any budget cuts. It's just different, as you know. So. Mm-hmm. Different things to think through.
So, hey, Dan, did the 10% pay cut in 2008 apply to sheriff's staff?
Yes. It was across the board. Everybody did it.
So we've identified two objectives so far that I see.
I wrote down three.
Okay. Well, the two that I've got were that we would attempt to not dip into reserves. And the second one I had was that we would identify those non-essential services with an eye towards maintaining critical essential services.
The third I wrote down was minimizing layoffs.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep. Dan, do you think there are other objectives that we should consider?
Right now, I think, you know, like, I think we're fine until we find out more about what we're going to, you know, as the time progresses here, when we get some more actual numbers and that kind of thing, I think this can be fine, what we're dealing with here. And then we can give you ideas as far as, like, you don't want to dip into reserves. You want to keep the staffing levels that we have and then identify essential services versus non-essential. That's going to be a little discretionary on our part. I think if you're looking at us to do that, and because it's last time we did that same thing the last time around. And then you guys gave us directions, what you guys thought was actually an essential service versus non-essential. So that's not foreign. And yeah, however you want to handle the EOC group, if I can use that whole group of people, whatever that happens to be, that's, you know, again at your discretion, and, you know, we can work with that also. But that's given us some pretty good marching orders as far as, like, you know, we also got the idea too, is that, you know, we're trying to, you know, get the budget, you know, budget sustainable short term and then long term.
Do you think that we should provide some direction or some distinction between the areas where we would look for budget savings? I mean,
you cut out. I
appreciate what Mark. You probably could go in and get $3.8 million just out of some capital items, but I think you probably need some direction that that's not the only place to look for the savings.
That's correct. That's a short-term idea. And then we're, you know, cause like a lot of those, you know, that revenue that we're looking at, like I said, that's, you know, it took us 7 to 8 years before we actually saw those revenues come back to being whole. So that's the long-term aspect of this thing.
So I heard Dan suggest another objective, which is that we are focused both on short-term and long-term financial stability.
Yeah.
And I think that is a great idea, and pulls into that idea of the costs of deferred maintenance and whether we want to take on those or not. And then I guess I'd suggest, I thought, Dan, that your overview of that cash is king and then kind of the summary of the different ways that we might reduce costs, I thought that was a great overview, really helpful to me. And I can imagine that Mark and Dan facilitating each department head doing an analysis of their own budget with that list of possible cuts, possible guidance about where to save money would be sufficient as a starting point. Because they know their, as we talk about all the time, they know their department best, they know what they do best. And so to the extent that they can identify savings on the operations or capital side, the less the money has to come out of personnel. I mean, that's really the kind of the top line on all that.
Yes, absolutely.
So I would say also, I appreciate, especially the minimizing layoffs, and that means we're minimizing layoffs on the behalf of, we already said that those are essential services. I mean, I don't think we had non-essential services happening that much. So I think we need to figure out how we're going to be, and I don't want to sell the short, the long-term down the river to save us short-term. I think we all just kind of agreed to that too. And I don't want to just say, oh, we're going to not do anything for the next 2 years and capital replacements, and we'll be fine when the third year comes around. Well, we're going to just have a bunch of junk left around here, and we're going to have roads we can't drive on, equipment we can't drive, and the rest. So we need to be very strategic in our plan as we move forward, and that's how I want to have that happen too. But I think, and again, I want to save our employees the best we can, and then minimize layoffs, and everybody shares in the pain too.
Okay, I agree with all of that, and I think with Beth's addition of the short and long-term stability being a fourth objective, maybe it would be appropriate, Mark, and I see you're back with us, for you to put those objectives into writing so that they can be used by staff in moving forward and making these recommendations.
We've got it fixed for now. I want to, if I could, and I was in the middle of explaining one piece that was a follow-up to what Doug mentioned. I think we're going to hear at a point in time that local governments, along with certainly state governments, are going to be part of the whole economic stimulus for the country. So I really appreciate what Doug said about the fact that we may find that we're kind of an economic engine when we go out and we let contracts and we do our asphalt projects. We want to put people back to work and we want to get the economy back on its feet. So, and I think everybody's going to be asked to do that. So that's going to be probably a role that we'll play. And that's probably more reinforcement that we need to be judicious and strategic in the way that we go about just exactly what those budget cuts are going to be. Second point I want to make, commissioners, is by engaging our department heads and their staff, we have an opportunity for them to be on the ground floor in terms of this budget planning, and they can be a very important participant from the standpoint that the more you can identify within your respective departments that are essential services, that can help us reach our budget goals, then that means the less that we need to do from a personnel standpoint in terms of personnel budget cuts. And I think that that raises the stakes, a little more skin in the game, if you will. And I think we'll have some really some good ideas, some good strategic planning, and some willing participation.
Thanks, Mark. Can I just add one other comment here? I don't want to open a can of worms. It might be, but I'm going to just do it anyway. PBB.
So, really wormy thing you brought up.
I know. I'll just make a brief statement and hopefully we can resolve it pretty quickly. But this is exactly what it's for, but we're maybe not at the point where we're ready to use it for this yet. I don't really know, and maybe Kendra has a better idea, but I'd say to me there's two options. One, we either are going to try to utilize it, or two, we need to stop spending the $30,000 a year on it, because clearly we're not going to use it for what it's meant to be used for. So, and maybe that's overly simplistic, and I guess maybe I'd just invite Mark to work with Kendra, who has been administering that software program, to see if there's anything that we are prepared to do within that program to help with this process. Because like I said, if we're not going to do it, we should probably stop paying for the program, quite frankly.
On the other hand, though, there's a lot of work that's gone into PBB. There's a lot of programs that have been identified, and we can go back to my favorite, you know, it's entirely possible that we could suspend our graffiti removal program for a year. Among other programs.
Well, I guess what I would say, I maybe was a little too black and white about that. We know that we're paying for it through the end of the year, no matter what, I think. I don't think there's an option to change that. And so I guess really it's just putting it on Mark's radar that's something we have been attempting to stand up. I don't think we want to create any unnecessary like gymnastics for our department heads to use PBB in this process if it's not useful to them. You know, they're already going to have to do a lot of work to do this. So I guess my point is if it makes sense, they should use it to the extent they can. And we should just know that that's a tool that's out there. And I just don't know enough about it to know how useful it will be. And I would just maybe say that we have some department heads who probably will find it very useful in analyzing their departmental budget. And then we have some who will not find it useful, either because they haven't really put in the work on the front end yet, or because they just don't understand it as well. I don't think there needs to be a universal across the board push, like we need to make sure we use this technology tool. I think we need to probably meet our department heads where they are. And for those who it is going to be useful to them, we should encourage them to leverage that tool. But I think we should respect that other department heads may just not be ready to go there, and it would represent an additional burden for them. And I would say, if in the end of all this, we don't think that PBB was useful as a budget analysis tool in this situation, we probably shouldn't continue with it next year. But that's a discussion for after that. I mean, we have a contract and we have a grant. I don't think we're going to just cut that off anyway. So I'll refine my comments somewhat.
Yeah, it was damned inconvenient for COVID-19 to show up now instead of waiting for a year when we had PBB fully implemented.
Yeah, I know. Can we get someone on that? I guess really my recommendation then is that Mark just have some conversation with Kendra to fully understand what we have been doing with PBB, to just identify if there are opportunities there that we might take advantage of, but that we would not want that to interfere with our department heads' process of analyzing their budgets. It would just be to the extent that it's helpful to them.
Agreed.
One comment I would, you know, if we wanted to look at the fourth quartile, I think that would be something that would be something to look at. Let's put it that way.
I think that's a great idea, Dan. And I know we still have some department heads on here, so I'll just reiterate what I've said before, which is, I don't think there's ever a point where we say, well, you're below this line, so you're gone. It's always going to be a conversation and an analysis. It'll just be that. Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm all right with all of that, Beth, and that sounds good. And again, we got a lot of money invested in this thing, and I continue to say we were using program budgeting before. This just put it in this thing that this little box, this magic box, and now if the department heads find some magic in that box for them to to provide for and just like Dan said, the fourth quartile and whatever. So I'm all good with that, but I think we're going to have a separate process that, that could substantiate what we're already doing. I still wonder whether the fourth quartile included our objectives that we just talked about today, and who made up those quartile objectives to make it first, second, third, fourth quartile. So we didn't do that, and our discussion we just had. Was not, maybe it is in there. We don't know. So I'm good. So let's keep moving forward.
Yeah, and I think just want to reframe or say this one more way. It's a software tool, and the process is really the most important thing. And the tool supports the process. And so, to the extent that the tool is able to support the process, it's useful. And if it doesn't, then it's not useful. And that's, we can't confuse the two things, the tool and the process.
Great. Well, Beth, I'd like to thank you for opening that can of worms. And
we put it back in pretty quick.
Yep. And we got the worms back in the can for the time being. Is there any other discussion that we need to engage in for Dan's benefit and for Mark's benefit, now that we've identified these objectives? And have we, Dan, have you presented all the information that you wanted to us today?
Yeah, I'm done with that. And then I think I also sent you guys, there's a 12-step process to financial recovery. I put that in your guys' email, I think, yesterday also, so.
Yeah, I found that really helpful, Dan. I thought that was great. And I'm really glad that I know you've probably interfaced with GFOA before we engaged them, directly, but it's helpful to see that they have these kinds of tools available for you.
Yeah.
Dan, I have a real random question here that came up yesterday during our Western District meeting. We believe that there's going to be some funding coming to the county that could potentially be placed directly in the general fund. This would be federal dollars coming from some of the federal legislation. Are there any Tabor implications in receiving those federal dollars?
No, federal actually, Tabor actually exempts federal funds from any kind of revenue, we don't have the revenue limit anymore, so they don't have to worry about that. And the only other one is that it would impact, well, it doesn't impact our 3% reserve requirement, so there's no implication there. And the other thing, like we talked about yesterday, or Wednesday, I'm sorry, is that, if the board so chooses, through a resolution, that we could tie up that reserve, that 3% reserve that comes out of Tabor, by just putting it onto a capital asset, as opposed to making it liquid. And then we could actually use that money.
So great.
No.
Thank you.
Okay.
So Tim, I think the only thing we haven't answered is a timeline, when Mark and Dan will be ready to come back and give us kind of the next step of this process.
I think you're on, Mark.
I would, and certainly, Dan, please weigh in, but I would say that we would want to, maybe a week out from now, begin to have some preliminary information and some data sets for the commissioners, so that you get an idea of just exactly what we've uncovered and what we've identified and exactly what is going to fit strategically into the list of objectives. But I would say probably a preliminary report would be available to us within the week.
Next week, yeah. Yeah, I was thinking we got to get something out to the department managers and then however they get it back to us and then accumulate that information.
So maybe to give sufficient time, we should put it on our agenda, not a week from now on Friday, but maybe on Monday, just to give a little additional time. Does that make sense?
What date is that? That'd be...
Whatever date that is.
So we're looking...
That would be ideal.
If we Monday the 13th.
The 13th, okay.
13th, right, you bet. That would be ideal.
Okay.
All right.
So the other thing that we haven't talked about is again, some when we kind of bounced this off when we were talking about the security preliminary with True North on Tuesday, when Monday, time keeps flying together here. But so we have some things in the capital budget, you know, and I'm just thinking off my head here, the salary survey. So when do and those projects or whatever, what kind of process do we have to say, no, those are no longer on the table for now, and we're going to postpone them, or what? And again, I think we've seen that, and Mark's, is that maybe that's part of what Mark is going to do with our looking at our capital program as well. So I'm asking that.
Well, I guess the real question there would be, do we have any purchases that are going to happen in the next 10 days that we might want to put on hold until we get this information?
Commissioners, that's an excellent question, and that's what we'll go ahead and identify. Dan and I will get with Julie and we'll make sure that we're not going to enter into any contract or any purchase that we could defer, especially on the basis of the conversation we're having today. So we'll make sure that we put a hold on those things and not begin to trigger anything that's going to be a financial obligation.
You know, I recall seeing a pretty well-prepared spreadsheet that Julie provided in the last few days showing the status of all of her upcoming purchases.
Yeah, I was going to say, she prepared a spreadsheet for us that showed like what all the items that are going that have been purchased and to be purchased through April 7th, and those things that are beyond that are identified also that have not been purchased.
Another question, who is responsible for the analysis of our office's budget? Are we asking Mark to do that, or is that something the three of us need to do, or one of us?
Are you asking the chair?
I'm just asking the universe, Tim.
Well, what...
So
one thing's for sure, I think our travel and lodging and meals budget is
way down.
Is way down, and I'm not sure, beyond that, what's even discretionary for us.
Well, I mean, the community services budget is the other big one, and then some of the projects that are going, some of the contracting of consultants has happened directly through our office as well. I don't have a strong opinion, but whatever the department heads are doing with their budgets, somebody needs to do it with our office's budget, and I don't know who the right person to do that is.
Well, I think that would probably be a job for Mark and Kendra to work together on.
I think Doug had a comment. I don't know if he agrees or disagrees. Doug, you're talking to yourself over there.
Oh, I'm sorry. So, yeah, I would concur. Kendra would be great at this, and I, with Mark's help or whatever, but yeah, I think we need to focus on it as well, and Kendra can do that, so.
Okay, just wanted to make sure it was somebody was doing it, so does that work for you, Mark? Okay.
All right, are we done with this portion of our COVID-19 work session? I think we are. Dan, thank you very much once again for a good brief and just a good presentation. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. What else do you guys want to talk about today? All right. I know I've got a couple of things to talk about, and it might fall under that heading of some work that can be done by staff that doesn't have a lot to do right now. And one of the things that's come up in a lot of the conversations I've had with people over the last couple of days is a lot of questions about testing and different kinds of tests. And ideally, we would leave that up to our public health director and our medical officer to at least try to analyze some of that. But obviously, they've got more to do than what they can do right now. And so maybe it's just an open-ended question. Is there a central source of information about all of these testing regimens that would help us answer our constituents' questions?
I think you probably have to be more specific about what kinds of questions people are asking. I mean, are they asking about the tests in San Miguel? Are they asking about who gets tested? Are they asking about the shortage of testing kits?
Yes, yes. And in addition to that, there's a lot of different newspaper articles out there talking about the new test. You can get an answer in 10 minutes on. And,
right.
Whether, you know, there are these other blood tests that could find out and identify people that have had it, and what are we doing about it? And my impression is, and not that I think we're doing anything wrong, is that we're just relying upon CDPHE guidance, and these are the tests that are available. But we do know that there's lots and lots of other testing going on out there, and different counties are looking at different ideas, and it just feels beyond my capacity to keep up with all of that.
I would recommend that maybe we put this, now that we're scheduling a weekly Board of Health meeting, that we put this on that agenda and ask Brian to be prepared to give us some information. I feel like he knows the answer to these questions. We just need to compile it based on the conversations we've had with him before. I think asking someone who is not a medical professional or in public health to try to figure it out is not going to be to our advantage.
And I don't disagree with that. I just have felt a little bit less well prepared than I'd like to be able to answer some of these questions. Because people are saying, how come you're not doing this? You know, Rapp County, you need to jump on board here. You need to do this, you need to do that. You know how it
is. I was commiserating with Jason this morning when we were filming our morning update that now we know how they feel all the time. People kind of didn't know we existed before. But I guess the other thing I would say is I'm getting a lot of emails like that too, not as many about testing, but lots of other topics. And I get tagged on social media all the time to respond to questions too,
That's a strong argument against social
media. I know, but the reality is we're living in this environment where everybody has way too much information, like way more information than they need to be dangerous, right? And so I think we do have to be a little bit careful about, sometimes people are just spending their entire day consuming news and they want an answer right now. I think we just have to be a little bit delicate in how we navigate that, because I don't know that we do have a responsibility to respond to every single thing that somebody read in the news and now they're a public health expert and they want us to weigh in on it. The information is out there, quite frankly. I don't know. Anyway, that I'm ranting a little bit, but
I think that's a good suggestion. I do think at a certain point, the public will expect us to be able to say with a single voice, this is the path that we are following for
right.
a testing regimen, and this is why.
And we asked Brian that before, and he gave us some good information, but now there's new information out there about different kinds of tests, so I think we just need his input again.
he did bring up his skepticism about the San Miguel testing regimen, and it was interesting at yesterday's Western District meeting. Tisdale addressed that, and they had been approached by a very similar company about doing the same thing in Ouray County, but they ultimately turned down an offer of some free testing because of the infrastructure that they put into place to actually be able to perform the testing. Ben threw around numbers that they would have had to have had upwards of 100 people outfitted in PPE over a period of time in a new location in order to pull off the testing. So that's the kind of information that I have difficulty answering people when they ask me about it. But and maybe we could prep Dr. Harrington by having a short series of questions before he gets on that call on Wednesday of next week.
Do you want to just communicate those to him? And I see Doug's trying to talk. Sorry.
Go ahead, Doug.
So I haven't been questionable about the testing at all. We've made our commitment to the fact that it hasn't been supported by public health, and that's why we championed the 12-day and the stay-at-home orders and the rest, because we didn't have the background and the support of public health to be moving forward on. I'm not wavering at all on the testing thing. I think right now the history and the evidence doesn't lay that out for us and how we can move forward on that. So I'm still back in that we're doing preventative just as the governor's doing by people staying at home. That's what we want to do.
That's a great comment, Doug. Thanks for that. The other question that I didn't get answered from yesterday, I was still curious about us through the EOC purchasing testing kits. And I'm still a little bit confused about that. I was under the impression that all the testing kits were being given to us by CDPHE. Does anybody have any insight into that?
No, I don't. If I were going to guess, it's probably similar to the masks where we're pursuing multiple avenues. But I'll relay that question to Mo. I'm in the office, so I'll just step
okay.
in and ask him to send us some information on that.
Yeah, just curious about that. That is all that I have for right now.
I want to just mention that it sounds like the word is out to some folks that we're looking at this order tomorrow that we're reviewing. And so we may just expect that we would have members of the public joining us. The only reason I say that is we should just make sure that whatever agenda is posted, that it is clear on there that public comment should be submitted in writing, just as we have previously. So that's probably just a note for Deanna.
You got that, Deanna?
Heard.
Thank you. Agreed. I don't have anything else. How about you guys? Doug, Mark, anybody else?
Oh, you know what? I'm sorry. One other thing. In terms of kind of transferring back some of the authority to the county manager, I didn't know if at some point we want to review, not today probably, but that the delegation of authority that had occurred and kind of go through that list with Mark. And determine a timeline for those responsibilities being transferred back to the county manager where appropriate. So maybe we should just provide him that memo that Tom put together laying out the delegation of authority so that Mark is aware. And then we just need to figure that out. I don't think there's a huge rush, but just wanted to keep it on the radar.
Well, good discussion for county manager update time next week.
Sounds good. I have been copying Mark on the accounts payable approvals as well as the overtime and the department head approvals for the hours. So So he's been copied on those as well. Again, I'm back into Mark, and so don't want to overload you. So, you know, a little bit at a time. I'm comfortable doing what I'm doing till you're ready. So,
yeah, you know, speaking of which, I've still been, I've been approving department head hours here over the last week, and they're still coming. At least some of them are still coming to me.
Which, okay, let's add that to the list on the delegation of authority, because obviously that was transferred to you at some point, and it's a question of when and how we want to transfer it back.
I have a question.
Sure.
In regards to COVID time entry, since we're no longer tracking your COVID time because it's not overtime, should I be letting Lori know that she can change back those payroll approval routing workflows to the way that they were before I was put into the process so I could enter time?
Works for me.
But we still do need to enter time.
I thought we were only entering time that was going to be overtime.
On the 214s. But in ESS, all hours that related to COVID-19 are still being entered.
Okay, disregard them. Thanks.
Okay. Anybody else?
So that's an interesting question.
Could send me your times for the last week so I can get those in today, that would be great.
Very good. Thank you. That was my question. So, yeah, I'll finish mine up. We'll get them off to you. I'll drop them off when I come to work.
Like Mo likes to say, any alibis?
So, yeah, no, I guess I have one question. So we have the, when's the memo for the policy committee? So it's not going out today. And are we sending that memo to the policy team? And when are we sending that?
So I laid out my proposal for how we handle that in my email. So I guess I need you guys to say yes, because there's assignments to us about phone calls and such. I had said that it would go out today after the policy meeting, but I'm thinking maybe actually we should make those phone calls this afternoon and then send the actual memo tomorrow morning, if you guys are all right with that.
It's okay with me.
Okay, and I mean, yep, I don't need you to respond. If what I suggested looks good to you, then we can just go ahead and proceed with that.
If you're not using that diagram, then that letter that Robin sent should be ready to go.
Yeah, I know Doug had some questions about the diagram. So Doug, do you want us to try to refine the diagram, or do you want to just leave it out?
I think it's simplest just leave it out for right now. Again, I think it just kind of maybe confused the situation just a hair. So, anyhow.
Okay, so then the letter is ready. We'll just leave that out then.
And then I have the policy group email list from Deanna, so I can send that to you guys so you have it to send out tomorrow.
So Tim will be sending those as the BCC chair. And so just provide that to him.
Okay.
Great.
And then Kendra, you'll need to figure out, I mean, it won't be hard, but there was, I think, also just you setting up an alternative number for the new policy group 2.0.
Got it.
Okay. So it just sounds like we're done.
Yeah, I'm going to ask one last time. Any last minute comments, items?
I Googled any alibis once to try to figure out what the heck it even means. It's just a military thing, but nobody seemed to know what it actually means. It's like why you're referencing alibis. It's any closing comments, but I couldn't figure out why the mention of alibis.
Well, the alibi would be, I suppose, presenting the excuse why you haven't done what you were supposed to do. So.
Fair enough.
All right. This meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thanks, guys. 10:30 tomorrow.
Thank you.
10:30 tomorrow.
Yes.
Great. Thanks.
Yep.